talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marion way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange, read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on, turn on, I'm in, is on today, the Exchange Club.
And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday. Friday, May the 1st, 2026. May Day 2026. 14 and a half minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Exchange Club here on WGH Talk Radio. We continue our discussion this morning with Democratic political consultant Greg Haas. And so glad to be joined, as we always are, by the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. And Mary Ellen and Greg go way back, so we've got a little bit of reunion going on here today. But Mary Ellen, I got to talk to you for a second here. The other day, we went down and visited with President Emeritus of the Ohio State University, E. Gordon Gee. What was it like? I haven't talked to you since then to reconnect with President Gee.
It was great, and I'm still in awe of that. It was great fun. Yeah.
The man has a great charisma.
Yes, he does.
There's nothing like President Emeritus Gee.
Yes.
Now, the interesting story for people who haven't heard it, years ago, when you were Treasurer of the United States, you called him up and
asked him to run for governor.
Why did you think he was the guy?
Well, I liked the way he ran Ohio State, and I thought, you know, that guy could be a great governor. And I called him up, and he said, well, he said, I think I'm okay right here. And, you know, you think about it, and probably the salary would be yes, would be probably a terrible
cut. Fringe benefits would be.
I hadn't even thought that through.
Yeah,
but
I think he made the right choice for him.
Yes.
It turned out okay for him.
But I was always in awe of him because he had said that group of guys running up and down the football field was his budget, and I thought that was such a good statement.
Greg, what is it about President Emeritus Gee? I know a lot of people asked him to run for governor, we learned.
Yeah.
Well, what did he have that other presidents of universities don't have?
Well, I mean, you guys both mentioned it. It's that charisma. I mean, he is just, he's small and, bow tie and everything, but he's the center of the room every time he walks into it. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, you can have, major celebrities in the room, and yet he somehow manages to be the center. I mean, he's just got that aura of a guy on fire, a guy who can really do something.
Now, Mary Ellen, Greg said he met you in 1981 before you made your first attempt as to run for treasurer of the state. What are your memories of first meeting Greg?
You know, that's so long ago. I can't remember that.
Yeah.
Where were we?
It was at the Palace Theater. We were doing a fundraiser for Dick Celeste.
Oh.
And you came up to it. As I recall, it was one of your first stops, one of your first campaign stops. Carl Hughes was with you, I had known about you from family and other other connections. I went back to him. I said, "This lady's, she's got it."
You said that?
I was very impressed. Go ahead. Yeah.
She's got it.
I looked at who you were running against, and I saw those six guys. Yeah.
Weren't they a bunch?
Yeah, they were.
You know, I think about that bunch. They were from all over the state. They were all very different, and they were quite a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, when we look back, how did your relationship grow over the time, over Mary Ellen's political career?
In the heat of battle.
Yeah, yeah.
We had some tough times, really, I mean, politically, because Mary Ellen ran into, you know, I mean, that 86 election was just a major, I mean, you know, I mean, Dick Celeste often, unrelated, brings that up as an example of what you can overcome, because the deck was really stacked against us in that race.
Now this was Mr. Jacobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, from
Cleveland.
Cleveland, who had a lot of money.
Yeah.
And spent how much money against you, Mary Ellen? We talked about this recently.
It was $2 or $3 million.
It was $2.3 million reported.
Oh, that's it. $2.3 million. Yeah.
But that was what was reported. But like, for instance, in a lot of, they had a hot air balloon that the Jacobs company paid for that just said mm-hmm. Jacobs on it. You know, mm-hmm. that they had it outside of the baseball and football games and up on the lake. And you know, he had, and to his credit, I mean, he had played a role in opening up the flats and developing it, and he got credit for it up there. And then his dad did save the Cleveland Indians from leaving Cleveland. And so they had this, you know, kind of, you know, we had to worry about them cutting into our base.
And they did.
Yeah.
In Cleveland, they cut into our base.
Yeah.
You know.
As time went on, you said you were all for and one of the main backers to get Mary Ellen to run for governor before she was appointed treasurer of the United States. Why did you think that was a good idea?
First of all, I think I call myself the engineer of it.
Engineer?
I hope you don't think that's an overstatement, but I always kind of view it as I saw flashes of it in 1990. I mean, the very interesting thing happened in 1990. George Voinovich, first of all, there had been a major pro-choice decision. I forget which one it was, but it was a huge setback in 1990. And Tony Celebrezze, at the beginning, was a right-to-life candidate. He did change. He awkwardly changed his position, and I think that ended up hurting him because it didn't go smoothly. But there was a moment there where people were like, because we knew the choice issue was going to be big, there were people who were kind of organically saying, well, maybe we ought to look at Mary Ellen for the top of the ticket. And that wasn't anything that we were organizing or pushing at that point. But I saw the way people reacted to that in 90, and it was very positive. Even though everybody liked Tony, and Mary Ellen and Tony were very close. You know,
I would like Tony a lot.
Yeah, there was that little bit of a buzz in 1990, and that's why, you know, George Voinovich said, I don't want to run against that woman, is what he said.
That's direct. Oh no, where did he say this?
I don't recall, but I think actually
he didn't like me.
Actually, you guys became friends later, didn't you?
No.
Oh.
No. We never became friends.
The grudge to this day.
Yep.
Oh, Lord.
I still know how to hit her button.
Yes, yes, yes.
But you know, he either turned the plain dealer loose, or the plain dealer on their own went out to make sure that Mary Ellen wasn't the candidate, and they did a hatchet job beyond all hatchet jobs. Had a reporter in the office every day for about 2 months or 3 months, and requested every piece of paper. And
so Voinovich ordered that.
Well, he got it. Let's put it that way. Tom Vail, the owner of the Plain Dealer, was totally committed. And he wanted to block her. And we mentioned Reinhardt earlier. Reinhardt talked about running for governor in 1990. And lo and behold, I have Marianne Sharkey became a very famous reporter, but I'm not recalling his name right now. But he showed up in my office, and they wanted to know about Bucky and the babysitter. And I'm like, why is the Cleveland Plain Dealer? Well, then I realized they were doing the same thing to Buck that they did to you, eliminating Voinovich's potential opposition. And they did a hat. Well, actually, on Buck, they did a fair job of talking about bringing up the babysitter incident with Buck Reinhardt and all of that. And so the plane dealer just went out to hatchet people that George was afraid of.
Mm. Mm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So he called you that woman.
He knows all this stuff.
Yeah, all this, all yeah. My.
He was manipulating all this stuff.
but now, Greg, you did say last hour that you think if that had come to fruition, that Voinovich would have won
probably
in 94. Why would he have won?
Well, it was a huge Republican tidal wave nationally. I mean, it would have been sailing against a big tide. I mean, there was, that was the Contract on America election year, biggest pickup in the House by either party to that point. And so there was that huge Republican wave, and I just don't think we could have overcome that. But I do think that, you know, Mary Ellen would have kept it close. It would have been a good fight. And some of the other statewides would have survived, maybe, and you know, some House members and others that got wiped out in that election.
You know, it's interesting. We came across a newspaper article recently when Mary Ellen had left her position as Treasurer of the United States in 2001. And I can't remember who the head of the Democratic Party was then, but they were quoted in this article as saying they wanted her to run for governor or thought she would be a good candidate. Then they said everybody knows her name. It's on the money. She would be perfect. Now, in that era, do you think she would have done
yeah,
well?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think it's easy, you know, from the vantage point of the political consultant to try and encourage people to run for higher office or whatever. I mean, it's in your own interest. You have incentive to do it. It's much different to be the person, you know, who has to look at it and who has, has a life to live. And you know, you're out there manipulating and trying to make the decisions about the tactics and what will work and what won't and that yeah. kind of stuff. You're not, I mean, it's hard to stay focused on a person's personal life and you know, I mean, at that point you'd been traveling, working your tail off for mm-hmm. yeah. 30 years at that point, and I yeah. think you were, you know, I think
I wasn't interested.
Yeah.
It's so strange, isn't it, how you can change in your desires to do something. I thought I don't want to do that now, you mm. know.
I think it's called common sense, actually.
Yeah. Well, you'd had a good career at that point. You had yeah. a good, it was yeah. a good run. Yeah. Greg, I want to ask you two things, and I'll come back to Mary Ellen here. How is it possible? Because Mary Ellen and I have discussed this in many interviews. It really is. I don't think it could happen today. Somebody go from a school board, elected mm-hmm. to school board, mm-hmm. and in 25 years, yep. they're Treasurer of the United States. Yep. 25. How does that happen? What's your explanation as a political consultant?
Well, I mean, first of all, you got to say there is luck involved. I mean, you know, but it's first and foremost hard work. It's first and foremost a family that is supporting what you're doing. You know, I always compare, you know, Mike Dukakis to Bill Clinton. And when Mike Dukakis went home at night, he had to explain to Kitty why he was doing this and try and justify it and try and, you know, ease her pain at him doing it. When Bill Clinton went home at night, he'd have to wait for Hillary to get home. And when she got home, she would be talking about how we're going to kick their butts, you know. I mean, you know, that... To me, that's why one of the reasons Bill Clinton was elected president, you know, and I think that Mary Ellen's daughters and Norman were Norman in that time period was a perfect, as I've said before, perfect mm-hmm. spouse because he stayed focused mm-hmm. on Mary Ellen. And when I mentioned earlier, can I tell the alligator story? Alligator mm-hmm. story?
Yeah, I've told it.
Oh, okay. When the plane dealer came after Mary Ellen, of course Mary Ellen was upset, and she was getting a raw deal from the biggest paper in the state at that time, and she Norman heard her crying, and and she was, well, I'm looking for what I'm going to wear. And he just kind of says, well, Mary Ellen, just dig into the back of that closet and get that alligator suit out and put it on and tell them all to go to H-E-double-L. And when I was in shock when Mary Ellen came in the door, because she's just laughing, can't wait to tell the story. and it changed, and that changed all of us in the room. That mm-hmm. changed, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's focus went from...
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating story. The other question I had, did you have any connection with Gertrude Donahue?
Oh, only from afar.
Well, this is an interesting thing, because this is another person that Mary Ellen did not have the best relationship with. It was the treasurer who preceded her and asked her to run for treasurer of the state. You say if it had not been for her, you probably would not have run for that position.
That's probably right, yeah.
And this was the first female treasurer of the state of Ohio, Gertrude Donahue, and yet... Mary Ellen has talked about how unsupportive she was. She was a Democrat. She was a woman. She was in the position and yet could not have been less helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I really think Gertrude wanted to be the woman who could win. And didn't. The more she thought about the idea mm-hmm. of Mary Ellen winning, the more she didn't like being one of the women who could win. But more than anything... that is incredibly important in terms of elected office, and something that people should always understand is Vic Donahue was governor, held several offices, and she was his stand-in after he died. So she wrote in on that name, Donahue. There's never been another Withrow that's held statewide office that I know of.
No.
And so she ran on her own name, ran on her own credentials, and won in her own right. And I don't mean to take anything away from Gertrude with that comment, but it's a very significant difference.
Well, and just to put a cap on that, because I want to come to the current times, but you had Gertrude swear you in.
Mm-hmm.
And you said the reason you did that.
To be nice.
Even
I tried to be nice.
Tried to be nice. And she was happy to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And she was happy to do it.
I think she was surprised.
But you've even said recently in interviews that you've done that she's the other one who you really can't.
The way she treated me during that campaign was enough for that.
Yeah.
I was aware at the time that Gertrude was not supportive, and I wasn't working directly on Mary Ellen's campaign. I was working for the get out the vote and the field operations statewide with Celeste, and so I was tangentially involved. I mean, hearing stuff out on the stump, and I was aware that Gertrude was not saying good things and not being helpful to Mary Ellen.
Well,
I think she wanted a commitment on keeping people on. Wasn't that part of it too?
No. No, she the people would do that from all the areas.
Yeah.
Not Gertrude.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she never asked me to do that that I ever remember of, but
okay.
She turned on me as I was running, and I couldn't figure out why.
Yeah, I think
it was one of those things.
I think it was as you're. She saw you as a county office holder when she was being nice to you,
mm-hmm.
but when she started to view you as a peer,
mm-hmm.
I think that's when the trouble started.
I wonder how she felt when I became U.S. Treasurer.
Well, that's what shocked that she. You never heard from her during that time because she lived to be like 95 or something.
Yeah, she. She was around.
You think she would have written a letter or something?
She was in Florida, with her sister,
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing I want to ask before we get to the current treasurer's race, because that's interesting in and of itself, and Mary Ellen is involved in that race, so we want to get to that one. When Mary Ellen was in her prime, state treasurer, running for office, out there doing her thing, you witnessed it. How would you describe it?
Well, I would describe the first word I would use is genuine. I mean that there was nothing fake. There was nothing. I mean, sometimes you got to speak when you're not feeling well, and you got to you got to tough it out sometimes. But Mary Ellen was herself always, And even if it wasn't, you know, even if she wasn't particularly happy about something. I remember one of Mary Ellen's employees one time saying something I think is very true. She says, you know, most people really don't know for sure what they like on everything. Mary Ellen knows what she likes. I mean, she is able to, I mean, you know, have you ever caught yourself eating a salad from someplace like the third time and saying, you know what, I don't like this. Well, Mary Ellen would know after the first bite, you know, and not order it three times like the rest of us. But she's very, you know, I mean, who she is in any moment is and I think that is the real power. The second thing is that she gave me a lot of latitude, and we had a great trust.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, he gave me this letter to when I was going to debate Judith Brockman.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I wish you'd give these to me ahead of time so I could look them over.
Yeah. I'll look over the letters.
Well, Judith was attacking Mary Ellen for having accepted money from Paul Tipps.
This was the Republican who ran against Mary Ellen in 1990, I believe.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And this was a letter from her, from Judith Brockman, to Paul Tipps asking for money. As I told Mary Ellen, we got it that morning.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
But it was a bombshell.
Yeah, I used it.
Well,
it came in perfect.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting? When we looked at those election results the other day from your time as state treasurer, what's fascinating to me, running for statewide office, I don't know if this could happen today as treasurer of the state. You won three times. There were Democratic governors in Celeste, a Democratic governor in Celeste, but also a Republican governor in Voinovich when you ran some of these elections. Yet, every time you increased your percentage, the win.
That's right.
It got bigger every time you ran.
Led the ticket in 90.
Yeah, led the ticket.
Of all candidates, Democrat and Republican.
So what do you think allowed for that? Because a lot of times people get tired of candidates. They don't want them there that long. They do something in office that they don't like.
I think a lot of it was how brilliantly, I mean, I really mean that word, she ran the office. I mean, you know, the Link Deposit Program, the Star Ohio Program, the things that she brought to a sleepy office that helped people was something that people really responded to. And they'd never heard, you know, they'd never thought about the treasurer's office impacting people's lives directly. But Mary Ellen made it work for people, brought it to, I mean, a time when people had 20% interest on loans. Farmers were able to get the loans they needed for far less. Small business people were able to get loans to keep people employed. And the brilliance of that program was no money was risked because it was just going to a local bank and saying, we'll put this CD, you know, we'll buy this CD from your bank if you loan this company or this farmer money. And they, of course, had to go through an application process and all that. But, you know, that was something that people just had never thought was possible. But, you know, and there was never, in the entire time she was treasurer, there was never a single penny lost. Mm. And I think she's one of the few treasurers who can say that.
Now we've got the treasurer's race we're in right now. This is going to be very interesting this year because we have a primary coming up on Tuesday. Now we have Jay Edwards, who's been endorsed by Vice President of the United States, J.D. Vance, and he's running those commercials on television. It's been a long time since I've seen a treasurer running commercials as much as Jay Edwards is, especially in a primary.
Mm-hmm.
He's running against Ms. Roehinger. She's endorsed by Vivek Ramaswamy. A lot of people felt early on she was going to be the strong candidate, that she had the money, she had Vivek's endorsement. But now it almost seems as if people think Jay Edwards is going to pull this out. How do you see this, Greg?
Well, I think Edwards is going to pull it out, but he's going to pull it out in a way that's damaging to him in the fall. I mean, he's clearly going straight at the Trump voters. within the Republican Party and the Trump loyalists, and that will help him in the primary. But there's a price to pay for that in the general.
Mary Ellen, do you think it's going to be Edwards or Roehringer on Tuesday?
Well, it looks to me like it's going to be Edwards, too. I mean, I've seen all those commercials, and it's very disgusting.
there you go. Yeah. And if it is Edwards, if it's Edwards and Walsh, now Walsh is the Democratic candidate. Mary Ellen is the honorary chairperson of that candidate, met with Seth. He came to Marion here to meet with Mary Ellen. How does that matchup shape up, Edwards and Walsh in the fall?
Well, I mean, you know, Edwards has more of a political resume, and the key will be for Walsh to get the resources that he needs to make it, you know, to actually turn that against Edwards, that he'll run the office in a partisan way and that he's a, you know, political hack, whereas Walsh has a totally, you know, young, clean record, and I've said this several times in other places. Mary Ellen needs to be more than an honorary chair. She needs to be a constant talking point. Not that everybody in the state remembers who she is, but they know people who do. It rings a positive bell with people, and I think that. You know, making it clear to people that she's gonna that he's gonna run that office the way Mary Ellen ran it, and try and make it work for people, stay on top of every penny, and stay focused on the office itself. Edwards is already, I mean, his ads have nothing to do with the treasurer's office.
That's right.
That, I mean, and that opens up a perfect contrast. Can Walsh get the money? You know. As Mary Ellen will tell you, the hardest office in the world to raise money for is the treasurer's office, mm-hmm. because, you know, the people who do business with the office can't contribute to you. And the people who, you know, have all the other, you know, Senate race and top of the ticket stuff, you know, that's where the money goes.
Well, Mary Ellen, obviously you're supporting Walsh and you want him to win in the fall, but how do you think this is going to shake out if Edwards does win on Tuesday? What's this race going to depend on for Walsh to win?
Well, it depends on how Walsh approaches the campaign. I think that's got to be it. And it'll be interesting to see, but... I think he'll work very hard. Yeah.
How involved would you want to be at this point in a campaign?
Well, I want to be helpful as much as I can, yes.
Because there are so many things that people do now. I mean, you get those robocalls from J.D. Vance or Vivek Ramaswamy for other candidates.
Yeah.
Would that be something that a Walsh should do?
Oh yeah. I think the great advantage of using somebody like Mary Ellen is with today's technology and the ability, you know, for her to be in Marion and yet be anywhere in the state you need her to be through the computer, and so there's a lot of ways. But I would hope, I mean, I would hope down the stretch that there might be some advertising that where they might want to include Mary Ellen. It goes back to, can he raise the money?
Well, you know what's fascinating about this? I don't know what's going on this time around. Maybe it was the COVID election last time, but it has been a long time since I have seen so many television commercials. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a television commercial. Edwards has got one with J.D. Vance in it. I finally know who the treasurer of the state is. Robert Sprague has two different commercials out there for Secretary of State. You see Vivek Ramaswamy's commercials all over the place. I mean, there are commercials after commercials. So, I mean, you throw somebody like Mary Ellen, who was just with Colleen Marshall in the last week. I mean, that's really what Seth Walsh, a basic unknown, is going to need at this point.
Yep.
Somebody who is known,
yep.
who people know, to back him up.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's not just the people who know, but the people who recognize what you're saying and the validation that Mary Ellen gives you, even with people who don't remember specifically who she is, once they're introduced to that, they know, because you introduce them to it, and then that endorsement carries weight.
Well, the casino ads certainly work.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, it didn't hurt.
I do not think that issue passes without Mary Ellen.
Yeah, and it told you who she was, and her signature was on the screen, and she said what she said. And we've often talked about the ad against Mandel that Kevin Boyce, I believe, ran. Mm-hmm. And that Boyce is not even in that ad. That ad is all Mary Ellen talking about why Mandel is not the person for the job.
Yep.
So it certainly has been done before.
Absolutely.
What is he doing?
You know, Mandel, that's a great question, because, I mean, he lost his sugar daddies, you know, and he got divorced. And,
okay.
And
his father-in-law. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think he's still wandering around out there, but I don't know what he's up to.
Well, Mary Ellen, the guy who's got your old job, Robert Sprague, is running for Secretary of State. And you've seen his ads. He's got some interesting ads out there.
He does.
They're fascinating ads to watch.
Well, yes, but I don't know. It's going to be an interesting race, I'll tell you.
Have you ever, we talked about your run-ins with Mandel the other day, which weren't so great, but have you ever met or talked to Robert Sprague? He's been there for 8 years.
Oh, no, I've... I couldn't remember his name.
He's been very, very under the radar.
He didn't do anything.
Yeah.
He was treasurer and did not do anything. Isn't that interesting?
For 8 years.
Yes.
How did he stay under the radar, Greg, for so long and get elected?
Well, because we had all these buffoons out there taking up all the oxygen. I mean, you start with the Donald Trump and you work all the way down, and I mean, they draw all the oxygen away, and you know, you've got the Jim Jordans and the people like that, and there's no oxygen left for the treasurer's race, you know. I mean, so I think, you know, he's survived by laying low.
Well, I think this time there's going to be some oxygen left for it, because these people are very adamant about getting this seat. Now, the Secretary of State's race, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
You got Russo and you got Hambly. Now, in the beginning, the common wisdom was Russo's going to win this.
Yeah.
She's well known.
Right.
She's got experience. She's the one.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, you get to about the last month and people are saying that Hambly looks to be the odds-on favorite. Who's going to take this on Tuesday? What do you think? I know you've endorsed Russo, Mary Ellen.
Oh, I like her, yes.
What do you think's going to happen?
I don't know.
What do you think, Greg? Who's walking?
I'm right there with Mary Ellen. I don't know. I guess if I were forced in that race to bet a dollar, I'd bet on Allison, but I wouldn't bet much more than a dollar on the race, because it's just he does seem to be attracting some traction out there, and she's been you know she's had the difficulty of being having all the problems that go with having been a legislator and in a very ineffective legislature. It's not her fault by any stretch. She was one of the positives there, but people do not have a good feeling about, you know, the legislature, especially Democrats.
Is Kulowitz going to take the Attorney General primary?
Yeah, that'll be a comfortable win.
Will that benefit Russo? That I think a lot of people feel Kulowitz is the establishment candidate, because those are the two big statewide races.
It's a good question. It very well could. I mean, they're both from Upper Arlington. They both have a lot of the same supporters. The fact that he's looking so comfortable at this point means that she can benefit more from the mutual supporters that they have. So, I could see that.
We talked earlier about the gubernatorial race, and you said if the race were held today, that Amy Acton would win this by a rather large margin.
Yeah.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in November, I think she's going to win by about 15 points.
15
I think she's
points.
Win comfortably. Everything's wrong with Vivek as a candidate. I mean, you know, and I think, as I said earlier in the hour, he has nothing Ohio about him except the fact that he shut his factory down and moved it to Texas. I think people are going to feel that. I think people are going to feel that Amy is Ohio. And the great thing about her, and I said this in the first hour about one of my frustrations with Democratic candidates statewide in the past, is they don't run on their love of Ohio. They don't talk about how, you know, the way Jim Rhodes used to and Dick mm-hmm. Celeste. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I mean, they did everything under the sun to show their passion for the state. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jim Rhodes probably drank about 5,000 gallons of tomato juice, you know. I mean, and Dick Celeste wore those goofy Ohio glasses, you know. But it worked because people in Ohio have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and demonstrating that love. Well, that's Amy Acton's story. You know, I mean, you know, it was Children's Services that kept her alive. You know, it was Youngstown State that launched her. She is woven into Ohio, and it's a perfect contrast to him.
Mary Ellen, early in the campaign, you didn't know much about Amy Acton. You weren't particularly warm on her. You hadn't met her, and some of the things she'd done, you weren't particularly a fan of. Then you met her, and that changed it all.
That's right. Yes, I really like her. Yeah. Yes.
You know, and that's what, it's so interesting, and I'm trying, somebody else recently said, Mike Larson, the comedian from Plain City, who was in Hollywood for all those years, wrote for Jay Leno, and the whole group ran for office here in Ohio. He said he was not a particular fan of hers. He's obviously a Democrat. Then he met her, and he heard her, and he liked her.
Yeah.
And yet, as you and I have talked about, her events are not really open to the media or advertised to anybody other than Democrats to attend. And do you think that'll eventually change?
Well, I think so. Yes, it has to, I think. Yeah.
How much is David Pepper helping her, do you think?
He's a big help. Yeah, he's a big help.
Having a former head of the Democratic Party in Ohio be your running mate can't be a bad thing.
Well, he knows government upside this way and that way and knows everything about it, and he'll be a big help for her.
Being a pioneer for women, what does it mean that here we are getting close to possibly the first ever elected female governor of Ohio?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Yes. I sure hope things happen for her.
What advice would you give her?
To get out there. I think she is out there. But what I liked about her so much was that she talked to everybody, and she didn't rush out the door as soon as she was done speaking. She gave everybody time, and I thought, what a great candidate that is. You know,
her personality, I always hear, is very, very good. Are you surprised at that from somebody who is not a politician?
Well, you hardly ever see somebody running for governor that comes in the door and talks to everybody and is the last one to leave. That doesn't happen.
Well, and Greg and I talked about this in hour number one, but Mike DeWine is an interesting wild card in this.
Uh-huh.
Because she was his health director, obviously during a very trying time in his gubernatorialship, COVID. And every time Ramaswamy runs an ad knocking her for something related to COVID, which he has done a few times, most recently about shutting down the primaries in 2020, who is the first one out to denounce the ad and defend her? Mike DeWine, of all people. What do you make of that from this guy you've known a long time?
Well, he likes her, you know, or he wouldn't do that. Yeah.
Do you think that when it's election day, he might vote a little differently than what he's saying?
I don't know. But, you know, she worked for him, and he likes her. Yeah.
What is that, Mike? Is there a Mike DeWine? Can Mike DeWine help a candidate at this point, Greg?
I don't think in the Republican primary that his endorsement really has a lot of power. But I think he can help, a candidate in the kind of helping them look gubernatorial. I mean, if he does some things out there, if the Republican Party pressures him into doing some stuff for Ramaswamy, he will probably be helpful in the air of the office and the history that he brings. But I don't think, I mean, you know, endorsements are really strange things. They can, like I said earlier, I think that Mary Ellen's endorsement in the state treasurer's race is big and does have a lot of legs to it. But that's because it fits a very specific thread. When you blast out an endorsement and stuff, I'm just not sure how much it helps anymore. And especially if you're not really backing it up with a lot. And I don't see DeWine, you know, stomping for anybody, really.
Well, on the Democratic side, we've got two former living Democratic governors, Strickland and Celeste. Now, Celeste, interestingly enough, he was one of the first to endorse Amy Acton way back last fall, even before we knew she was going to be the singular candidate in that race. A lot of people criticized him at that time for doing it early, but he felt it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Strickland waited until he knew she was going to be the only candidate because he had ties to Tim Ryan, and he said he felt that was the right thing to do. Now he's endorsed her. But Celeste has also endorsed Hambly mm-hmm. in this Secretary of State primary. What's Dick Celeste's place now in the Democratic Party? Does his endorsement mean something in these races?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, again, not specifically in the endorsement itself, but when he speaks at an event or when you have him, you know, I mean, he is so credentialed, you know, that, I mean, you know, an ambassador, you know, Peace Corps director, Rhodes Scholar, all of that. And I think that, and he's always been a great speaker. A quick story on that, if you don't mind, would be his press secretary told me a story about when they were in 1990, Ann Richards was running against George W. Bush and knew it was going to be a tough race. She got all the sitting governors to come in to speak for her and at a fundraiser. And they're backstage, and they're trying to decide who will speak first. And nobody, of course, normally wants to speak first. But Clinton's hand shot up, and he goes, "I'll speak first." And when Clinton got done speaking, he walked by the Celeste table, and he looked down at the press secretary, and he goes, "I'm no fool. I'm not speaking after Dick Celeste." Mm. he was a great. In his prime, he was an incredible, mesmerizing speaker. I mean, national press people would come in and be in awe of some of the, you know, his ability to speak. He still shows flashes of it. I mean,
well, and you know what's interesting? When Governor Celeste speaks, he obviously is a great speaker, as everybody has said. But Governor Strickland, mm-hmm. in this day and age, holy moly, Governor Strickland will get up and he'll tell you who he likes and he'll tell you why he likes him, but he is the most fierce attack dog of the Republican Party. He will use every word and everything but the kitchen sink in an interview or a speech. Mm-hmm. What do you think Governor Strickland's place is?
I think it's that. I mean, I think it's the bulldog. I mean, he's good at it, and so I think that's his place. I wish that now he's backed off of it some, but you know, for a long time he was working the party to you know, keep his people employed, and that's something Dick Celeste never did. We were all kind of on our own, after he left. He wasn't in the state fighting to make sure his people got hired. And Ted did that for a while, and I don't think it was helpful. But now he's just doing that, you know, that bulldog approach, and I think it's very effective.
When he comes on, we had him on recently, I think it was to talk about the things going on in Iran, and boy, you just open up the mic with Governor Strickland, and you get things you think a former governor would never say. Now, Governor Celeste is still much more measured in that way, and I remember Celeste and Strickland were on in the same week, and I wish I could remember the quote, but Strickland had said something about Trump. And I said, Governor Celeste, would you say this? Governor Strickland said it earlier. And he said, well, I wouldn't go that far. You know, that shows the difference to me between the two.
Yeah.
Governor Celeste is only going to go so far with something. Governor Strickland at this point will go all the way. But the kids like Governor Strickland. He was the oldest delegate from Ohio to go to the Democratic Convention last time. And Christian Pearson, who was the youngest from Ohio, from Marion, came back, loves Governor Strickland, loves that fire in him. How do you compare and contrast the two governors, Mary Ellen? Governor Strickland.
They're totally different.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I picture Governor Strickland as very easygoing, but you say that, you know, he's a fiery speaker, right?
He has no problem calling somebody a racist. He has no problem calling somebody whatever he thinks they. If he believes it, he says it.
You know, I have not witnessed that.
It's a new phenomenon with him.
Yeah. I witness a very kind.
Oh, he is that.
Very kind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, he will show. I mean, he's come to Marion. I don't know how many times for things.
Yeah. So he comes to see me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think he. You know, I think you're right, though. I mean, I think he's just fed up. You know, and is just like.
Oh yeah. I think we all are.
Yeah. And I think that. You know, he's changed in the last year or two.
Yeah.
Before we run out of time here, this is going by way too fast. Greg, what's your favorite story about Mary Ellen? What's a story we don't know?
Oh, man.
Yeah, we'll go into the vault here. Go into the recesses and find something good.
God, memory, you know, memory is so tough. I'm 70 years old. My favorite story is a very simple one. I think it goes back to the first road trip Mary Ellen and I took. We were meeting at the Leaf restaurant parking lot at 95 and 71, and I pulled into the parking lot, and I got there way early. You know, it's my first road trip with a boss. You know. And Mary Ellen was already there, and she was knitting, and totally, you know, just as natural and kind as she could be, and I think she got an entire like Afghan done that day.
It was probably a baby blanket.
It was a baby blanket. That's exactly right.
I made baby blankets for all my people.
My son still carries his.
What kind of boss was she?
She was, you know, I mean, she was tough when she needed to be tough, but she was very fair, and very an excellent listener. I mean, you know, I mean, that was the thing that struck me. As much as anything, and she understood her role. I mean, and understood, you know, that she wanted to make it something more. And so, I mean, I think she was, you know, there's a lot of ways in which she was a almost perfect boss.
What were there those times where she would come in and do this, do that, do this, do that?
I don't really remember. I don't remember that. We should. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. But we should. We got to get Mo to call from the great beyond.
Mo was my chief of staff, and he was the last one. And he was, I think about him so much,
too. Me too.
And he was great, you know.
Well, you know what? That does bring up a little story. A dream I had one night. I pulled into this gas station, and somehow this gas station was Mary Ellen's gas station. And I look up at the counter, and Mo is behind the counter, and several people that work for her work, you know, stacking the shelves and stuff like that. And I said, well, where's Mary Ellen? And Mo goes, well, she owns the place. She doesn't have to come down here.
Mary Ellen, what was it like to have Greg working for you?
Oh, he was terrific. I just thought he was so good at looking into the future. He did that for me, and it was so helpful. Mm. Yeah.
Well, this has been a lot of fun to have you guys back together and do this just days before the primary, which is right around the corner, and we'll see what happens. Greg Husp, Democratic political consultant, and, of course, the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. We'll be back on tonight, 8:15 to 10 p.m., so don't tune away. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you.